the definition that we work by is culture is how we really do things in this organization. So if you think of an iceberg as a metaphor, there's what you can see above the waterline, 5 to 10% of an iceberg, but 90% is below the waterline. So a lot of organizations say, here's what we stand for, this vision, this value, and it's paperwork. Mm-hmm. But you want to get in, you want to find out, how do people really talk to each other? How do people really engage with each other? So to impact an organization's culture, my experience is you've got to be able to listen, got to be able to authentically listen to what's really going on. And that takes going metaphorically under the waterline, under the surface.
Welcome to the Learn It All podcast with your hosts, Learn It CEO, Damon Lemby, and SVP of Product, Darren Bridget. Our mission is to explore how continuous growth shapes the path to success. Our guests are high achievers who've learned there's always something new to discover. They'll share their stories, strategies, and insights with you. So whether you're a budding entrepreneur, a seasoned executive, an aspiring athlete, or simply someone who believes in the lifelong pursuit of knowledge, this podcast is for you. Join us now for the latest episode as we continue the Learn It All's journey through a world that never stops teaching.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Learn It All podcast. We are Damon Lemby, CEO of Learn It, Darren Bridget, SVP of Product, and we are joined today by Brian Lanier, who is an expert in DEIB. I'll just go ahead and give away the game right now. Brian also teaches for us. We feel incredibly lucky to have him doing that, to bring his work and his expertise to what we're able to help our clients.
He's a fabulous partner.
Yeah, he really is. He's a fabulous partner. So I'm going to introduce Brian in just a minute here with his credentials. But first, let me just read a little bit of the feedback Brian has gotten in his classes. Brian Lanier delivered another impactful course. I appreciate the content, but it's his delivery, sharing personal stories to highlight points, facilitating discussion, sharing back, willing to explain different ways when concepts aren't clear, and creating that brave space. Great class, great instructor. Just that Brian was an incredible facilitator. Thank you, Brian. You are a true professional. The list goes on and on and on. Brian, thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you. That's a great introduction.
Yeah, sure.
I want to take you everywhere I go. That's awesome. Thank you for that.
For our listeners, Brian is the founder and president of the Leaders Circle. It's a consultancy dedicated to providing organizations with tailored DEIB solutions. His journey includes regional vice president at Starbucks, a regional director of operations at KFC Canada. Brian is Canadian-based. And all this just highlights his journey around leadership, operational excellence in a diverse setting. Joining us today, we're going to be talking about DEI. We're going to talk about his journey and how he arrived at it. We're going to be talking about AI in the future. So thanks, everybody, for joining us. Brian, here's my first question for you, and this is our standard question. Since we're all about learning here, what are you hoping to learn and get better at? Something new. What are you hoping to learn and get better at in the next 6 months or year?
Wow, that's a great question. One of the things I pride myself on, and a little tweak to your introduction of me, I don't consider myself a subject matter expert as much on diversity, equity, and inclusion, but I consider myself a subject matter lifelong learner. I love that you're beginning with what am I looking to learn in the next 6 months. I'll start with what I'm looking to learn right now. I'm looking to learn how to deliver a message, a communication about what I'm passionate about through this lens to your audience watching this video that don't know me, that I don't know as well. Yeah. Really, I'm looking at how can I continue to grow and storytelling in a way that makes a difference through this medium called podcasting.
Yeah, that's great. Storytelling is such a big part of everything. And I think you actually include a lot of that in your classes too, don't you?
I do. I try to. People often ask me, how did you go from being a regional vice president with Starbucks or to a director of operations with KFC Canada and to diversity, equity, and inclusion belonging training. And I feel a little Forrest Gump, the character Forrest Gump, where he just had, I think I'm a little bit smarter than that character. But I think about all the situations that I just happened to bump into. I happen to go from a dishwasher to a waiter, and then waiter to a manager, et cetera. And I think that I try to just bring my lifelong experiences from being born in Washington, D.C., to being a military brat, moving 11 times before I graduated high school, living in Germany, and now living more than half my life in Canada. And I just try to bring all of that into how to contribute as people look at their own leadership development and this thing called diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging.
Yeah, it's great.
Brian, I don't want to just pass over it because you've had a pretty illustrious career. Can you take us back a little bit about how you got into KFC and Starbucks and your career there?
Sure. I started off literally washing dishes and worked my way up, and somebody tapped me on the shoulder. And before I knew it, I was one of the youngest managers and the only Black manager with a chain called TGI Fridays back in Dallas, Texas. They only had 41 locations. I remember because we happened to open up and the president came to our location on his 41st birthday with a motorcade. It was a big deal. I happened to go from a waiter to being a manager there. And then through, I'll make this story short, but somebody knew me and recommended me to go from, I ended up going from Dallas to Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, to be part owner of a restaurant. That's another elaborate story of happening to know the right person at the right time. Mm-hmm. And then I got recruited to run KFC Canada when they were owned in Mexico, and they moved me to Edmonton, to Halifax, to Vancouver, and I got recruited to Starbucks. And so that's how I spent 24 years of my history there. And then it was really just wanting to do something more than serve coffee and fried chicken. And I, as well as original director with Blockbuster Video, which I like to share because it keeps me humble. I was sure that was going to be a big thing. But I wanted to make a difference with contributing and learning and facilitating. And that's why I made the switch.
Ryan, let me ask you this. Going back to KFC and Starbucks, from a corporate perspective, were the cultures very similar or were they different?
Totally different. Totally different. Starbucks at the time when I was there was up and coming. They had only a handful of locations in Canada at the time. This goes back to the late 90s. And I, quite frankly, came in rather arrogant. I know this already. Don't you know who I am? And because I just didn't have the skill set to listen and be tuned into. That's a completely different culture. Mm-hmm. And I learned the hard way that one has to take the opportunity of listening more than speaking and learning versus going in like a bull in the china shop, which I hate to admit, but I did that. So my career there was shorter than I intended, but I learned valuable life lessons with that failure.
What do you think about this idea of organizations and culture? Is it something that you can influence from the top? Does it just bubble up from the bottom? How important is it in that sense, the organization itself, the culture that they create all around the world? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I believe in try to take on a growth mindset, which at Arnett, you've got a great class and I've had the pleasure of leading on growth mindset as well, that you can grow and continually develop. And at the organizational level, because we started off at the leader circle, we're in our 21st year now.
Wow.
Started off doing leadership development, and we always begin at the top. If we can't get the mind of the chief executive officer or the president, and if they're not walking that talk, I don't like that term, but if they're not being the work, it will not permeate, doesn't have a chance of permeating through the organization.
So you do feel like it can be, you can influence the culture from the top down. It's not always just necessarily happens from the bottom up.
Absolutely. It takes a champion and then champions.
Yeah.
But it's got to have the buy-in from the top.
Yeah.
But how do you, because somebody asked me this question, one of our clients, say overall, if the overall culture isn't, let's say, fantastic or exactly what you want it to be, but you're managing a team of, let's say, 14, what can you do to improve your culture, and at least in your team?
First, I think one can take, what do we mean by culture? So the definition that we work by is culture is how we really do things in this organization. So there is a, if you think of an iceberg as a metaphor, there's what you can see above the waterline, 5 to 10% of an iceberg, but 90%, 80% is below the waterline. So a lot of cultures say, a lot of organizations say, here's what we stand for, this vision, this value, and it's paperwork. Mm-hmm. But you want to get in, you want to find out, how do people really talk to each other? How do people really engage with each other? What do they really say about you? So to impact an organization's culture, my experience is you've got to be able to listen. You've got to be able to listen in a particular way. You've got to be able to authentically listen to what's really going on. And that takes going metaphorically under the waterline, under the surface.
I think that's a nice segue into some of the DEI issues. We can return to culture and corporate stuff too, but that long ago, the Starbucks was in the news around some DEI issues in one of their stores. And so let's not make this Starbucks specific, but it is one of those things where an organization tries to do something about it, but it seems like they run into trouble and they're not successful always. So what are the keys that you see to making DEI training that leads to a really positive cultural shift instead of something that ends up being almost like a box that just gets checked?
Yeah, that's a great question. Fundamentally, I am not a proponent. And this is going to sound a little weird. I'm not a proponent of DEI training as a standalone. My view is it's part of the culture, again, how you really do things. It's part of the fabric of how an organization can operate so that everyone in the organization authentically believes that they belong and that they're included. And I think if you look at the design of human beings, how we wind up being by default is we don't like change. And we only take on change when some kind of challenge happens or crisis happens. Mm-hmm. For the world, and with me, it was George Floyd's tragic murder in May of 2020. And then the world shifted. It was like overnight protests, this, no more of this. And then organizations said, okay, we will sign blank checks. We will be good stewards. But they jumped on again, dealing with the metaphor of the iceberg. Yeah. It was all superficial.
Yeah.
They didn't actually look at and do the thinking, how do we get it through the entire organization so it sticks?
Yeah.
So it's not a flavor of the month. So it's not where we have to hire a special person. No disrespect to all the people out there doing the hard work as DEI champions, but it can't be a side of the desk, a one and done, let's look good type of approach.
So it's got to be both, because the DEI training is so much about looking at individuals, your own assumptions, the biases, the kinds of things that you walk into a room with, and challenging some of those to be more authentically open and welcoming. But there's also like institutional change that probably needs to happen. Can it all just be change individuals? Can it all just be change the institution? There's probably a balance between these two things, right?
Yes, you've got to look at the systems, the processes. How do we recruit? Where do we advertise for employees? How do we promote? Who's on the panels making those decisions? You've got to look at all the systems. You've got to look at all the structures that are currently in place if you're looking at having an authentically inclusive business organization. That takes a lot of time. That takes a lot of effort. That takes a lot of resources.
I think this is in the same thing, but you mentioned that people don't like change, which is true. And some people out there are going through change, not because they wanted to, but they have to, whether they're getting laid off or whatever. But I would like you to, you had a 25 corporate career, but you made a big, big change. You made a pivot to going out on your own. Can you share a little bit why you did that and what that experience was like?
Yeah, it was going out on my own the first time from corporate to my own operator, my own consultancy. It was the effect of a crisis. I was dismissed from a job and given a significant severance package. So I was afforded the ability of nearly a year to find out what I wanted to do. And I got in touch with that. And then I use that to say, you know what, after 24 years in the hospitality industry and going through the meat grinder of playing that game for different corporations, in all due respect, I loved it and I flourished at it in different organizations, but it wasn't my real raison d'etre. It didn't get me up in the morning like the passion of contributing and leadership and facilitation. So that's what led me to work on my own. And I happened to, again, Forrest Gump analogy, happened to be in the right place at the right time. I happened to be hired by a client who is still a good, I'm having lunch with him. He was the CEO of a multi-million dollar organization and believed in Brian and hired me for a 2.5 year contract. I'm having lunch with him after this podcast. And that was 24 years ago. So I would offer, and it's easier said than done, because we have bills to pay. Follow your heart. Find out what really is important to you, because this doesn't occur as work for me. This occurs as my passion.
Yeah.
Now, I think that's super important. Absolutely, you should follow your passion, but you also have to be self-reflective enough to understand whether or not you can make a living at it, right? If it's something that you're good enough at, that there's actually a demand where you can make money on it too.
Yeah.
That's part of it. That's that Cal Newport thing, that sometimes people get in trouble following their passion because it's like, oh, I want to open a cupcake shop because I love cupcakes, but you don't learn enough about it and it doesn't, it's sort of torpedoes because you're not taking advantage of the things that you're good at. You're good at this work. Mm-hmm. It's something you've been percolating on forever. So it's like realistic passion is what we're saying. Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, it does. And there's a matrix that you have in the Growth Mindset course. And again, I don't mean to make this a commercial for your listeners. Yeah.
That's okay. Growth Mindset at Learn It. We offer it routinely. Please take it. Yeah.
Yeah. And you have an X and a Y axis where you look at is what are the conditions? Are the conditions favorable for me to make a change with my career or whatever? And then what's my capacity, my personal capacity? Is it high or is it low? And so you look at that. And then I don't want to get too far into that, but we have ways of training people to make these kinds of critical life-changing decisions if they want to take it on.
Yeah. You're not a leader circle. You have a team of people that you've hired to be a part of leader circle. How do you find a good team? What's your secret sauce for building a good team?
I'm part of an affiliation, a worldwide affiliation of people that have the same type of ontological approach to this training. That's a big word, ontological, but we don't take an informational learning approach where you study and learn and memorize. Okay, what's the definition of diversity? What's the definition? And can you say it back? We don't ascribe to that approach. We take the approach more of who one is being. If I'm being inclusive, you don't have to tell me what to do or say. I don't have to remember it. I'll authentically be it. And we have you identify what the barriers are and get those out of the way. So back to your original question, how do I select people? I draw from people that have the same ontological training style that I grew up in for over 20 some odd years. I led seminars with another organization, personal development company. And so I've got my more than 10,000 hours, if you will, of leading to hundreds of people, 3 hours seminars over 10 weeks and take it into your life. And I've got a coach still, and I'm part of a cohort still, because it's about lifelong learning.
Yeah.
Those people gravitate to you and you gravitate to them and you work together. And it's fun.
Yeah. I love that you took this tack. This is what we do at Learn It Too. It's not enough to just share information. Information doesn't create change. Just offering definitions doesn't create change. But it's challenging to help somebody be something. Because like, how do you be something? My background before all this is an actor, and that would be the worst note. Can you just be more this way? Can you be more that way? What do I do to be more that way? So given your approach, help people be something. How do you help somebody be more curious, be more authentic, be something?
First, we start off with enrolling them in a possibility. So what do I mean by that? When I actually got into this for myself, I was running KFC for Canada, and I had 1,200 people that reported to me in 84 locations. And I was a big shot, right? And one of my district managers, I had 15, she came back from doing a personal development seminar. She was waiting outside my office and she had to talk to me at 7-8 o'clock in the morning. And she apologized for gossiping behind my back, not working a full work week, and telling me she was about to quit. And I was like astonished with, I thought she was one of the good guys. Yeah. But that seeing her transformation had me see another possible way of being for a human being, for myself. And I ended up wanting to, I don't know what you got, but I want to learn that way of being. And that's what led me personally. My aha moment, it wasn't overnight. It took me 3 months of watching her and this can't be true. It's too good to be true. And then I just wanted to get into it myself. Mm-hmm. So to your listeners, it all starts with it. Usually it takes some crisis, usually it takes a breakdown. Also, you can manufacture your own change point. The new year happens, people make their resolutions, but those tend to break down because we don't have the structure, we don't have the listeners, we don't have the environment to coach and support us on how to keep our word alive over time.
Yeah.
And that's what you do.
Brian, I like what you said. How you could manufacture. Can you give us another example or go a little deeper on examples of how, besides, okay, it's a new year, but are there other ways people can manufacture the situation? I like that.
Yeah, I manufacture. It usually is around when I'm in touch with something big for me that's important to me. My daughter, Sable, she's 31 years old. She's the product of being around her dad doing this for a long time. So I pull her into some of the stuff we do, but we were having my mother come visit from North Carolina once. And my mother and my daughter at the time, when my daughter was 7 years old, they living in Canada, they didn't see each other that much. So I can tell my daughter was a little wary of being with her grandmother. She's going to be with us for 2 weeks. So we actually started to create, well, what do we want grandma to say when we put her on the plane to go home? And Sable and I had this back and forth conversation. And Sable, you know, as a 6-year-old said, we want grandma to say she had the best trip ever. We want grandma to say she loved going to Banff. We want grandma. So we manufactured, we created what the future was going to look like.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
And then you live into that future. And that's what we do with diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging.
Yeah.
We have people look at questions, not why not do something. Mm-hmm. It's a knee-jerk reaction. It won't work. Let me tell you why. We can't try it. But we like to dwell into what if grandma's trip looked like if we were being this way and that way, inclusive. What would our business organization look like? What if that guy that we think is weird, what if he really had the experience of being heard? That the operations department that doesn't listen to marketing, what if we had them be able to be on the same page?
Go ahead, Damon.
Oh, I was going to say, Brian, one of the questions I get asked a lot or I try to help with is around DEIB is like ageism. And I was just thinking to myself, what if you brought this person on board and you were able to leverage their past experience instead of looking at them as this person's past or prior?
I thought, Damon, you were going to say, I was looking at the screen and I thought, God, Darren looks so old. Hey, Aiden, what about that?
Ryan, what is advice around that? You know, because I think age is a big thing. And I think I like the what if part about it.
Yeah, that one hits home to me. I used to be the youngest guy in the room, and now I'm the oldest. And people tell me I have gray hair. I don't see the gray hair, but people tell me they see the gray hair. I am now embracing it. I've been elected to our Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors, and I am the co-chair of our Inclusion, Diversity, Equity, and Accessibility Committee. And I work with in the part of Canada where I am, we have got a big Indigenous or First Nations group And the functions that I go to, there is always a land acknowledgement. There is an elder that speaks. And my experience of the indigenous culture, how they operate, in my limited experience, I'm not an expert, don't pretend to be one, is they welcome and nurture their elders. And I have been inspired by that. And I step into now, I want to be an elder. I have had the privilege of mentoring a 17-year-old high school student for the last 3 years, Benjamin, who's got a scholarship to a university. And I filled out his application reference letter this morning. He asked me to fill it, and I'm honored to be that. So instead of stepping into the default ageism, Brian, you're 66, Brian, you're too old, I'm like, I've got a new lease on life. Like, what? I want to be an elder. Who do I have to be being that people want to hear from me and I can contribute to them?
Yeah.
But how do we get these younger generation managers or leaders to be open to bringing on somebody who's
to have that same idea? Yeah, exactly.
To have that same idea from their perspective.
Yeah.
I can tell you what not to do. Remember when I went from KFC to Starbucks and I went in there knowing it and telling, and it didn't turn out well for me. I was there less than a year versus a career. If I go in telling the youngsters, and I've tried that, listen to me, I want to tell you, look at what I've tried that and it doesn't work. So I've got it. I have discovered for myself the opportunity. My father's 92 years young. He's still very active. I talk to him at least once a week. He is my elder. He is my role model. I look to be that with my daughter. I look to be that with the various organizations I'm with versus pushing it on people.
Yeah. So Brian, you underneath so much of what you talk about is almost like a personal ethic for you. You talked about, I'm like Forrest Gump. I've been pretty lucky in all these situations. And you talked about your change into this career was like a crisis moment that you could have really obviously gone in the other direction. You personally respond to adversity in a pretty resourceful and positive way. Like we talk about seeing opportunities and obstacles and converting what looks like bad into what's good here. What are other people missing? How do you do that? And how can other people bottle up the Brian Lanier positivity? And I know that you're not always positive, but you end up there. I think that's the key.
Yeah, that's really the key. I don't wake up in the morning this way at all.
Yeah.
And it first, stealing a page from Malcolm Gladwell and his book, The Tipping Point, Eat Our 10,000 Hours of Doing Something. I recognize and acknowledge I've had over 10,000 hours of having the privilege to facilitate. And when I'm leading something or facilitating something, I know when I'm full of BS if I haven't practiced it myself. I have a coach. I participate in a cohort session myself. Even for this podcast, for your viewers, I've got 7 pages of notes, and then you throw all that away. So you prepare yourself. You do the work. Make no mistake. I think I've been lucky, but I do the work. And then the heart of your question is, how do others have it? I have 4 foundational principles that I try to live from. One is being authentic. And the access to being authentic is to be authentic about where I'm inauthentic. Another way of saying it is to tell one on myself when I can hear myself or my friends hear that I'm full of BS. Another one is to operate with integrity, which is an intention of honoring myself as my word and do my best to do that. I won't always keep my word, but that's an ideal. It's a mountain with no top.
Yeah.
Another one is being committed to something that's bigger than myself, my family, my daughter, my community, my people, giving back. And then another one is being responsible. So taking on that, and I'm not late for the call because of traffic. Responsibility begins with a willingness that I am cause in the matter of how my life goes. So those are the 4 principles I try to live by.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. It takes some effort. I appreciate you saying too, that it's your authenticity around talking around them, I think resonates. It's clear that you don't just say them, like you live them and you live them and you're willing to do the work. Was doing some updates to a feedback class recently. You know how some people take feedback really well? Like I'd say you're somebody who takes feedback really well because you turn it into something positive. But even the people who are shown statistically with research to be the best at taking feedback, I think we all just assume they must be great at it right away. Like they love it and they have no, it doesn't hurt. But even people that take feedback really well, it still gets them to hear critical things. And it's, and so essentially give yourself permission to have a process to get to where you need to be. It doesn't happen automatically and doesn't mean that it's without some emotional cost.
Yeah. 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 Right on. And then there is an art more than it's a science of giving feedback. And from a diversity, equity, and inclusion and belonging lens, it's being aware that different cultures have different, you have an opportunity to discover the nuances of delivering feedback to a specific culture. Now, this is a fine line because you don't want to stereotype. If you're talking to Black people, you've got to say it this way. Or if you're talking to this group, I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
Just saying the feedback or the way of communicating as an American, someone born in the United States, and then coming to Canada, so I'm a dual citizen.
Yeah.
I've been given feedback that sometimes I'm too aggressive, that you Americans are, you know, too bold. So again, it starts with a self-awareness, whether we're talking about implementation of diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, or self-awareness, we're talking about giving feedback, or self-awareness, we're talking about making a difference in your organization. That's the place to start. Where are you authentically?
Yeah, it's great. And putting that effort into really understanding others and not just assuming that it's the same. It's that kind of that platinum rule difference instead of the golden rule.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were going to talk a little bit about AI also, because our whole world is changing a little bit here. And I know that you've been playing around and experimenting with AI and how to incorporate this into your work. Can you walk us a little bit through your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I am, first of all, part of the fixed mindset that I have about myself is I am not good at technology. All right. I have to, it really takes effort to look and grow in the whole area of artificial intelligence. And I listen to podcasts, I read books just like you do, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners do. And I came across a podcast on WorkLife is put on by Microsoft, and they have an episode your listeners can go and listen to, the October 3rd, 2023 episode with the chief technology officer of Microsoft. His name is escapes me right now. I don't want to turn to page 3 of my notes, but
put it in the show notes.
But what he was, what the moderator was saying is now with, he talked about a lawyer doing a case and the lawyer reverted to AI and got caught by the judge. The AI made up these cases, and then the lawyer doubled down and tried to defend himself, but the judge just picked him apart and he got sanctioned.
Yeah.
So what I got from listening to the podcast is we need to change, we need the personal skill sets now more than ever to train the users of artificial intelligence. It's not the artificial intelligence that I'm grappling with. It's I need to expand my certain skills, my skill set to be a critical thinker, my skill set to critically think. What do I think that I already know? And what can I start to be aware of that I think I know, but I don't really know? So yeah. When I listen to a podcast, it takes me down a rabbit hole and I research.
Yeah.
We skill set on recognizing our biases. That's why transcending bias, whatever courses that we offer at Learn It, is so critical, because we all have biases. Yes. We need training on listening as well. How are we listening to one another? So AI is a tool, but it's a dumb tool moving to smart tools. And we need to educate the user who's using that now more than ever. That's what I'm really getting from AI.
Yeah.
There's a great article in February of the New York Times talking about so much emphasis on these technical skills, but how important the human skills are going to be acting in the AI economy. And it was, Brian, what you said, critical thinking, adaptability, emotional intelligence, you know, the interpersonal skills. And I assume that a lot of that for DEIB is super important too, right? Because like you said, those aren't the smart skills that the technology will be able to pick up themselves.
It is. And I think what gives DEIB, Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, Belonging, and by the way, one of the things I discovered for myself as I try to not use acronyms, it's a small thing, but it's part of the feedback. Just a real quick story. We were training an organization and a guy is from Caribbean. And he said, I feel so stupid. I'm in this company for 3 years as a manager. People use acronyms and I don't know what they're saying and I don't want to ask. So that's just a little aside for your listeners.
Good note.
And I lost my train of thought when I had that good note. But I say what you said again, Damon, about the New York Times article. I got it. It's coming back to me.
I was just saying that the article is about the importance of technical skills, but really we need to emphasize the human skills. So my question to you was, how does DEIB play a part in that? Yes.
Thank you for bringing us back. Hopefully we can edit that part. But if
no, this is the authentic us.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
I could write a great paper using artificial intelligence. It would take me a long time, but it would be great. And I could have all the citations and I could publish it. But if I'm not being that when I'm there, then going back and leading my team can snuff that out. And that's why MIT did a study and they found that 90% of the workforce, 10% of the workforce in the United States feel that they work in a toxic environment. That when you look at it, that's a significant number of people that feel like they've been treated with disrespect or they're not heard. And there's a loneliness epidemic out there as well. That's been cited 20 to 40% of people. We need the being of diversity of thought. We need people that authentically feel like they're included. We need equity and we need people that we don't need it. But what if people have that authentic experience of diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging?
Brian, one quick question for me is, so 10% of the workforce feel like they're in a toxic environment, right, for work. What is their perception of what a toxic environment is? What are some of the qualities or the lack of qualities that are define a toxic environment?
Lied to, disrespected, not heard. I can get you the link for that article, too, that MIT did.
Just send it over. I think it's a good question because you hear that word. But sometimes people are like, okay, what do you mean? What does that mean?
Sure. Yeah. Brian, it's a lot of great stuff. That feels like it connects back up to what you started off with when you were talking about your ontological approach. And the whole point is that you need to be like the tool. AI is great for collecting information and supporting research. We use it that way. What it does is it basically makes our classes better, but you don't completely outsource it, right? You have to bring human beings into the room, helping other human beings to be more human. And that can't just be completely outsourced. If you could wave a magic wand and the Brian Lanier, piece of advice that could just get into percolate every organization everywhere in the world, what do you wish in a magic, perfect world organizations and people would understand that would help them avoid that toxic feeling that people have that would just make the world essentially a better place?
Wow. That is such a great question. I didn't prepare for that one.
Yeah, it's not on page 7 of your prep.
What would I wish?
What do you wish people knew or would do differently to just make the world? And I know that's almost like, how can you sum it up into something small? But
or even just one step. What's the first step that could be made?
Yeah.
Surround yourself with people that inspire you, that you can learn from, that you consider you can grow from. That would be one. It's look at your environment. And then the second thing is just practice self-awareness.
Yeah. I think that's great. And again, unexpected. I think it's super important to call out who you surround yourself by matters. There's a lot of research to support that. So it's not, you don't do it entirely on your own, but it's still about building your self-awareness. And part of that is in community.
It is said.
Hey, you said it. As we start to wrap up here, Brian, we have a question we like to ask folks. This is one that you will not have prepared for either.
Okay, good.
Okay, here we go. People have had a chance to learn a lot about you. They learned about how you went from one adventure to the next throughout your career and how you approach training and things like that. What is something that a lot of people don't know about you or might be surprised to learn? For example, we had a guest not too long ago share that they had a love of meteorology, which was not widely known. What's something about you that a lot of people maybe don't know?
Another great question.
That's what we like to do is stump guests here. Hey, I know you pride yourself on being an open book, but maybe you're a secret Trekkie and we just don't know about it.
Here's what a lot of people don't know about me, really. In a prior life, I was involved with a woman who is an artist. And during our relationship, I learned an appreciation for original art that I still have today, and landscapes. Yeah. And I remember when I first was involved with her, even how I sat in a chair on an airplane and the fabric on the seat in front of me before that was, it was all gray. And then magically after spending time around her and seeing how she creates art and paintings, I could see that there's a strip of purple, another strip of yellow, another strip. I have an appreciation for original art by looking and studying landscapes, sunsets, seeing things, and then looking at them and then discovering, oh, I had no idea. There's another stroke there. So that's what I would say a lot of people don't know about me.
That's honestly, it sounds like you must have prepared for that answer, but you did not. I promise our listeners that was totally in the moment. Great answer. Thank you, Brian, so much for being here. How can people get in touch with you?
They can reach me at leaderscircle.com, LEADERS.com.
Brilliant. Brian, again, thanks. It was an absolute pleasure to have you here. I hope you'll come back and join us again. And once on behalf of all of our participants, thank you for the classes that you've been running for us.
And Brian, thank you. And I can't wait for us to meet again in person. You've always been a great mentor to me. So I really appreciate everything you've done for Learn It over the years. So thanks again for today.
Right back at you. Thank you both. All the best.
Thank you. All right. Cheers, everybody.
Bye.